So in light of obviously St. Paddy's Day, I just kind of wanted to rewind the clocks back a bit to Ireland in 1819.
Let's go.
You're looking at your bartender. He looks at you and he says, "How about a cup? How about a cup of tea for the big fella?" I don't know what movie that's from, but it's
I don't think that was Irish though.
No, what was it?
I don't know what that accent was, but it wasn't quite Irish.
"How about a cup of tea for the big fella?" It's like Boondock Saints or something. I don't know.
Yo, 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 welcome into the show. I am Ryan O'Leary.
And I'm Mike Zika.
And this, of course, is the Bourbon Playbook. Zika, it's just another
podcast in the basement.
That's right. You sound good, man. You sound a lot better this week. How you feeling?
100%, man.
That's what I'd like to hear.
It's good to be back.
It's great to have you back to 100%. It's great to have you all, the listeners, with us for episode 16 of the pod, right? Episode 16.
Wow.
It's going by fast. We're having a great time. I hope that kind of shines through each week. You could support us by subscribing on your favorite platform, Apple, Spotify. Actually, Zika, true story, I was at a meeting with my financial planner the other day.
Uh-oh.
I was like talking about the LLC and some of the stuff I was working on. And I was like, well, shit, I should probably tell you this podcast I'm doing. And I'm like, here's the podcast. Here's the name of it. He goes, is it this? And he just pulls out his phone and there it was. It was right there on his phone. I'm like, that's the one, man. That is exactly it. So should be super easy to find on your favorite platform. If you want to support us, that's a great way to do it.
Check us out on the interwebs at tbplaybook.com. T as in Tim, B as in Brady,
playbook.com. Not to be confused with TB12.
No.
Tom Brady's brand.
Of course not.
Let's go! Let's go, Nick!
I've been living in the soda for a little over a year now.
Wow.
Come February or March in this fucking state, dude, it's like the weather is on crack.
Every year.
We literally had negative 45 wind chills one day. A week later, it's mid-50s.
I mean, that sounds like March in Minnesota.
Yeah. Just had snowpocalypse last night. I barely even knew that was coming. I didn't even know that was coming until like an hour before it started. I'm like, wait, we're getting what? 9 inches of snow? What? It feels worse because of the wind. We don't have any trees in our neighborhood. But they turned a bunch of farmland into a neighborhood.
It's a wind turbine over here.
It is.
It's crazy.
There's farmland all around us and just this random neighborhood there right in the middle.
Yeah.
And there's no trees. So the wind just blows everything all over. The snow is all over the place. We'll get into that a little bit later, I think. But literally, we just had a snowpocalypse, snow everywhere. And on Monday, it's going to be in the 60s. I don't know if you've looked ahead, but if you look at the 10-day forecast, 60 degrees on Monday. So
it's like, do we shovel?
You could just let it melt.
You know what I mean?
I could. You couldn't. You got the shady side of the road. I got the sunny side.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Wait till April. It goes from like snow pants to bro tanks.
Yeah.
Seriously. Honestly, man.
I'll be in a tank on Monday. If it's really going to be 60 degrees, you'll see me out there with walking Ollie with the tank on.
Flexing.
Well, 100%.
Oh yeah. I love it.
Speaking of weather, I saw you out there with your driveway, and I think that's your pour of the week, right?
Yeah. Should I dive into
it? Yeah. Let's pour.
Hey, y'all, for real though, this right here, this goes out to all our fallen homies, yo. Come on.
Hey, yo, real talk.
All right.
I mean, it just seems like a waste.
I'm going to label this as the Snowpocalypse Smackdown.
Okay.
All right.
I stole that one from you.
Yeah,
you did. You told me that, right? But I was like, where did I come up with this great Snowpocalypse?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of creative.
My bad. I stole it from you.
No, it's good, man. It's good to...
Thievery.
Yeah. You got to reuse them when you can. So I think we both know we wake up this morning, 8 inches of snow, right? The nice thing is, you know, you think it's... Well, you hope it's that kind of light, fluffy snow. But I kind of had a feeling coming home from work last night that a little bit of rain was kind of melting, right? So you get, you know, under that, the first, you know, 6-7 inches. And then that final inch of snow is always what?
Slush.
Slush or ice, especially
yeah.
at that time, like in the morning.
Oh, it was heavy as shit out there.
Yeah, right. So So naturally, I get, you know, super excited to stoke up my Ryobi battery-powered snowblower, which might be the worst decision of my life. So I haven't used it in about a month or two, right? And so it's always kind of fun. I don't mind shoveling snow, right? It kind of gets me out, gets me going in the morning. But in this specific scenario, fired up the battery-powered Ryobi snowblower, and it gives me 10 minutes of hope before dying, okay? So in my mind, what I'm thinking is typically I have about a half hour, sometimes 45 minutes with like the light snow. So it's perfect for light snow, fluffy snow, you know, 4 to 8 inches max. No problem. I knock it out, right? Both sidewalks. I even do my neighbor's sidewalk sometimes. And this time, though, I knew it was a little different. You know, I jump the gun. I get out there. I start, you know, the first thing I do is I always basically carve a path right where the car is going to be coming in and out, right? So that's the first thing. So that's what I did naturally. And I get finished with just about halfway of, you know, from wheel to wheel. And then I notice the battery dies. And I'm like, okay, that sucks, right? And this is, mind you, if you have an electric snowblower or battery powered, you know what I mean when you get, you know, 8 inches of slush and ice and heavy snow, you kind of have to go back and forth, almost like a lawnmower that won't cut the grass, and you get really pissed. Anyway, so I'm going back and forth, right? I almost have to go over it twice just to kind of get the snow out of the way, and it dies on me. I'm like, no problem. I'll go get, you know, my backup, which is on the charger. I grab my backup, and I see there's typically 4 lights that light up, and there's 2 lights lit up. And I'm like, damn, of course, it's been kind of draining because I haven't used it for a month, and it's been sitting in the cold. And I'm like, well, that's all right, because I basically have one more strip to kind of complete this, you know, the driveway, right, of just at least the car getting out. I go down and, you know, plug in the new battery, and I'm kind of finalizing the last strip, and I'm about halfway there, and this is where the snow gets deep. And you know, because we have all this wind that pushes the snow, so it goes from, you know, 2 inches, like you mentioned earlier, to, you know, 8 to 10 inches pretty damn quick, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going back and forth trying to get it, and it dies in the last, like, I don't know, 10 feet, right? And I have like 10 feet by 2 feet left, right? That's all I need. And so I'm at this point, I'm kind of like a 10-year-old kid, right? Like that didn't get his cookie after dinner. And I literally take this thing and I just shove it down the driveway, like all the way into the road. And I just have like this tantrum, and I kind of like take a step back. And I look around, I'm like, God, did my neighbors see me like completely have a meltdown? I felt so embarrassed, right? And so then naturally, I'm like, well, I do have a shovel. I can do this the old-fashioned way, like a true winter warrior, neighbor Ryan does.
Yeah, the manly way. I mean,
yeah.
I'm out there with my shovel. It's you across the street, Zach on my one side, Jack on the other. You guys all got your blowers out.
Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid.
You're going to blow yourselves, all right? Yeah. Out there, manly man with the shovel, okay?
So, whatever. I do the old-fashioned way. I grab my my shovel. I get out there, and I'm trying to finish this last strip, right? And I first couple, no problem, right? I get to about 5 feet left, and it's getting really thick, right? Because it's just piling up, and it's probably like 10, 12 inches at this point. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, naturally, I'm going to take like a running start to it, right? So I get like a nice, you know, running start, got a lot of momentum, and I kind of bury the handle into my stomach, right, with my wrists. And as I hit the pile, there's a huge ice chunk underneath, and the end of the shovel, like the handle, goes directly into my gut, knocks the wind out of me, and I feel like I literally sprained my wrists like a schoolgirl.
You get your ass kicked by the snow.
And again, mind you, this is like, I'm not a morning person. I've talked to you about this. I didn't even have my cup of coffee, and I'm out there, and I've already had a meltdown. And then this happens, and I literally take the shovel, and I just fling it into my neighbor's yard. And again, it's another moment where I take a step back, and I'm like, God, did my neighbor see me do that? Like,
what's wrong with me?
Honestly. And so as I kind of like sit there, and I look at my watch, and I'm like, all right, I have my morning meeting in like 10 minutes. I'm like, you know what? Forget it. This is it. I'm done. You know, worst case scenario, you have to angle the car out, or you get some tracks and it packs down the snow. Everybody knows what that's like. So for me, I just threw in the towel, man. I said enough's enough. It is what it is. And before I came over to the pod, my wife naturally, you know, says,
Lizzie can't be happy.
Hey, have fun finishing that in the morning.
And yeah, I'm like, it's going to be all iced.
Damn. Yeah.
Well, make sure you tune up that battery.
It's plugged in. It's good to go. I got them both full roar. We're good to go.
I'm going to shout out my barber real quick. This isn't exactly the pour, although I will pour one out for my barber, JD. You're not a big barber guy, though, right? Like, it looks like you haven't got a haircut in probably years, right?
I'm basically homeless.
You don't do anything special
every
with the beard.
Every 5 months I get a trim.
Okay, and the beard, you do that solo?
I do it solo, but I, like, when I used to have hair your style and in your length, I used to love to get lined up and for sure blend in the, you know, the beard to the hair to the sideburns, one on the sides, blend it in.
It's life-changing, right? I wasn't always that way. Like, I think in my early 20s, it was like the hot chick in the mall, like that salon in the mall. Yeah. Like that was my go-to.
Aveda salons.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. No, not even that nice.
Yeah.
Like I was living in New Hampshire. I don't know if there was a lot of Avedas in the Steeplegate Mall in Concord, New Hampshire, wherever the fuck I was hanging out. But like, you know, you find the salon with the hot chick in it.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't really cut a lot of men's hair, but you do it because she knows what she's doing in there. And then you can hit Orange Julius on the way out.
Ooh, that's a win.
It's perfect. But, you know, it changed a few years into my journalism career. We've talked about that a little bit, especially last week on the pod, the New York Times thing that gave me the, you know, the little six to midnight.
Oh,
we started talking about an article, a news article or a feature that uncovered Uncle Nearest.
Yeah.
And that whole brand. That was a pretty fun episode last week, by the way.
It was.
But yeah, I was a sports editor for a newspaper for like 8 years. And every summer we put on this live event. I've actually shown you some pictures from that, right? There's some photos here in the studio. It was called the Seacoast High School Sports Awards, honoring the best Zika in coastal New Hampshire and southern Maine. Didn't want to miss it. But we had some legit special guests, right? We had like Danny Amendola 1 year, fresh off the Super Bowl. We had Pedro Martinez, one of my childhood idols. You know, it was probably one of the highlights of my professional career was sharing a stage with Pedro Martinez, man.
That's wild.
It was awesome. It was
such a cool picture.
Photo right there on the shelf next to the bourbon bottles. We had Paul Pierce. We had Charlie Coyle, who's a current centerman on the disaster that is the Boston Bruins right now. So we had some really cool guest speakers, and I can't be going to Supercuts. You know, I got to make sure I look okay when I'm on the stage. And one of the years we had a sponsor for the show, and it was one of those like spas for men. You know, have you ever heard of these? Like you go, there's a barber, but you could also get like a facial and a manicure. At this place, you could get your nose hairs waxed.
I could use that.
I would recommend don't do that ever in your life, Zika.
No. What about ears? I got some of that going on.
Yeah, that you let the barber just kind of buzz out.
That gets worse
as you get closer to your 40s.
Yeah.
Your haircut, they start really focusing on your ears, and you're like, what the fuck is going on here?
On a side note, when they ask you, do you want me to trim your eyebrows? That's when you're like, God damn, am I that old?
Oh, that's...
You know what?
Oh,
do that's you get
so,
that?
Oh, have you seen these caterpillars?
That black haired.
Dude, I get mine done.
Is that crawling over there?
I get mine done regularly.
Really?
I got Eugene Levy eyebrows over here.
Jim, I want to talk about masturbation. Now, I just want you to know that it's a perfectly normal thing. And I have to admit, you know, I did a fair bit of masturbating when I was a little younger. I used to call it the stroking the salami. Yeah, you know, pounding the old butt. I never did it with baked goods.
Quick side note, though, they were trying to really promote their... It was a new shop, and they were really trying to promote, like, the esthetician part of it, right? Like they really wanted guys to like do the not so manly stuff, like the facials and all this stuff. And they were offering it for free. And I was getting done up one day and they were like, hey, we got our girl here. She's offering like free nose hair waxes. And I was like, well, my wife would really appreciate if I got that thing under control.
You
know what I mean? Because it's a problem. It's a problem for you, the nose hairs, and it's a problem. I like to think that it protects me from all the toxins in the world my nose hairs do. I do have a nice thicket there in the nose, and I think it protects me, but my wife would like those to be gone. So I was like, does it hurt? And they're like, oh, no, it'll be fine. I'm like, all right. So they literally like take a popsicle stick and they put a bunch of wax on it and they shove it in your nose.
Like a COVID test?
Basically, but they let it dry and then they rip it out. And that's the whole thing. But apparently you're not supposed to breathe through your nose when they're doing this. And I didn't realize it because it dries the wax. She forgot to tell me this part. So I was breathing normally, and apparently that made the wax dry too fast because I'd taken a couple breaths through the nose. So long story short, she sat there yanking this popsicle stick that was stuck in my nose hairs. All right, I had a few nose hairs at the time.
Okay? Yeah.
There's a reason that I kind of wanted this done. I wasn't crying, but it's just like that thing with your nose hairs and they're connected to your sinuses. And it was just like tears streaming down my face. I'm like, I'm okay. And she's like ripping it out. Worst experience of my life. Never do it. All men listening, do not get your nose hairs waxed. Do not do it. Anywho, there was a sponsor and it was one of these male spas, but there was a barber in there and he was awesome. And that was the first time I got the haircut and the beard, like you were saying earlier,
yeah,
right?
Fresh.
And the beard faded in and the straight razor. And it was just like, I look like David Ortiz. My beard looks like David Ortiz, you know? Like, this is the best. So I fell in love. Ever since then, I've had a barber. And again, it wasn't always like that. I was super cuts. I was great clips. I was
great clips.
Go to the random, like, small town, downtown barber. Like, I'm sure there's one in Victoria. There's probably a barbershop in downtown Victoria. You know, you get that $30 haircut from the old dude who's been there forever, and it's not a good haircut, guys.
Yeah.
You know it. I know it. You know it. We all know it. All right? You're fucking up. Go to a real barber. So shout out to my guy, JD. He's got a chair at Fades of Gray. It's on 10th Street in downtown Minneapolis. I highly recommend, especially if you're a bearded man. And if you're a bearded man who schleps your ass to Great Clips, you got to go. Got to go see my guy, JD, if you're in the area. Also takes care of my son. It's really cute. Gives him little fades. So
I love
love it. But anyway, I was leaving the shop last week. It's like noontime. I'm famished and I'm still relatively new to the area, right? I'm still getting used to the fucking weather, right? I'm not used to it yet. And I'm like, all right, I really got to broaden my horizons. I can't just keep going to Starbucks and the Mall of America. I have to like go check out other places. The one thing with Minnesota, coming from the East Coast, where I'm a huge seafood snob, right? Like, I love my seafood. The burger game is fucking on point out here.
Yeah.
Like, you go to a dive bar, you get a better burger than you get in New Hampshire, where I was from. You know, like a real burger joint. Like, it's just fantastic. Everything is on point here. So I'm like, all right, I usually don't eat a lot for lunch, but I'm going to find a spot. Like, somewhere nearby. I'm downtown. I'm not always in downtown Minneapolis. I do go all the way downtown to go to my barber. Because that's how serious I am, Zika, about the lineup. So I'm looking up this place, and I find one. It was like a couple miles away. It was called Too Mixed Up. You ever heard of this place?
Interesting. I have not.
All right. So it was a former food truck. It's now in this food hall. It was called Gray's Food Hall.
Yep.
Right in the shadows of Target Field. So I go in there. It's a nice spot, right? There's a lot of people in there. Really, like, it seemed like a good meetup spot for like business lunches. Like, there's a lot of people dressed up,
yeah,
clearly all working and having like a meal together. And here comes O'Leary, like, just rolling in, like, you know, wearing like just not business attire. Let's put it that way. And I roll up to this joint, Too Mixed Up. There's a bunch of joints in there, but I rolled up to this one. That was the one I had found. It had 4.9 stars on Google. So I'm like, must be good. So I go. And I order the Texas Rodeo Burger.
Yes.
And I decided I'm gonna treat myself. And EJ, the chef, really cool dude, he calls me up when my food's ready. And he goes, all right, man, you're going to need some napkins. And he like kind of pushes the tray over to me. I'm like, holy fuck. Like, this burger's the size of my head, right? It's like crazy. He goes, push it down and go to town. You know, so that, I'm like, all right, bro. I'm like, I'm excited. And he goes, I'm excited for you. And it's like, that's just such a badass thing. If you're like the chef who made the burger, like,
hell yeah,
that's a badass thing to say to someone. And I walk off and like, it was an experience eating this burger. It was good. And again, picture me by myself in like a pretty nice like food hall with a bunch of like people that are all buttoned up. And I'm just, you know, having a time with this burger. It is like, I don't want to say sexual, but it was like a romantic experience.
Food gets that way.
Yeah,
man.
It was.
Especially a nice Angus patty. I mean, you came.
Well, it was a double smash.
Well, double trouble. So
double smash.
Well.
And then there's these three like giant onion rings that just made the burger like really big. And then you gotta push it down.
Yeah.
And it was just so fucking good. So, and there was a bunch of burgers on that menu. And I think they were all smash burgers like this. So I got to go back and try it. I see why it was so highly rated. So I'm going to pour one out for EJ and the crew over there. Find them on Insta or go find them at the Gray's Food Hall if you're ever in downtown Minneapolis. 10 out of 10 burger. It was phenomenal. So yeah, Fades of Gray and Gray's Food Hall. How about that for symmetry for the pour of the week?
I love it.
So good.
Cheers, brother.
Wordsmith. Cheers.
All right, Ryan. So our bourbon spotlight of the week is not a famous sports writer, but in fact, a delicious bourbon called Henry McKenna 10-year bottled in bond.
Henry's going to die when he hears that. So I don't, Henry's pretty famous when it comes to sports reporters who cover the AFC East in the NFL. He's an NFL reporter for Fox Sports. But he formerly worked for USA Today, and I'd had a little Patriots podcast with him. So Henry McKenna, we are going to drink to you tonight, my man.
Absolutely.
Hope all's well.
Pouring out for Henry.
He's probably the most famous person ever from Keene, New Hampshire. One of them, at least. Yeah.
All right. So this week we're covering Henry McKenna 10-year bottled in bond. MSRP around $55-$60. 100 proof, obviously, bottled in bond. And just to kind of recap, what is bottled in bond mean? Aged for at least 4 years in a federally bonded warehouse, distilled in one single season. Typically, that's either January to June or July to December, and then distilled by one distiller at one specific distillery, and then bottled at 100 proof, 50% ABV, with no additives.
It's a cool looking bottle. It looks like it's going for top shelf, right? The first thing I would say is it looks like money, right? This bourbon is money.
Don't talk that way.
You're so money and you don't even know it.
That's what I keep trying to tell you. You're so money.
Could you not mess with me right now?
There's literally a Benjamin like label. What do you call that? That strip across the top there?
A sticker?
Sticker.
Yeah.
That's what they call that in the bourbon game? Is that the official term?
That's what I call it.
Okay. All right. So Zika throwing 10-year-old tantrums in his driveway. He's going to call this the sticker. Okay. There's a sticker of a Benjamin, a $100 bill going up over the cork, right?
Yeah.
And then it has that color scheme, right? The dollar bill green kind of throughout. It is a cool looking bottle, cool looking color scheme. Honestly, it reminds me of some like fancy Scotch bottles you'll see. It's kind of got that vibe to it.
Spot on.
Yeah.
And it got the gold foil on it. And I mean, if you're going to the club and you're drinking a bottle of bourbon, all I can think of is like that Rihanna song that's like, all I see is dollar signs, you know, like,
yeah, no,
this is the bottle, man.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's the green.
Put the Hennessy aside, break out the Henry McKenna 10, the HMAC 10.
All right. So a bottled and bond single barrel, huh?
Bottled and bond single barrel. So that's actually pretty rare. And we'll get into that here in a little bit about what exactly that means and why it is kind of rare. But a few accolades in the meantime. 2019 San Fran World Spirits Competition Best Bourbon and Best Single Barrel, double gold winner multiple times, and one of the longest age bottled in bond bourbons available today. All right, Ryan, time for a little history. You ready to break out the college ruled spiral notebook and pen and pencils?
You always say, like, you got your pencil? And that makes me laugh every time listening back to the podcast, because I can't remember the time I wrote anything down. But anyway, history lesson. Yeah, this is my favorite part of the show.
All right, let's do it. So in light of, obviously, St. Paddy's Day, I just kind of wanted to rewind the clocks back a bit to Ireland in 1819. County Derry, Ireland. Henry McKenna was raised in a land where whiskey making was already deeply ingrained with his culture, right? So if you think Irish whiskey, guess when Irish whiskey was first recorded with their distillation process? What year? I'll give you a clue. Bourbon came much later in the late 1700s in the U.S.
So we're going before the 1700s?
Before the 1700s.
Are we going like before Christ?
No, no BC.
No, we're not going BC. Okay.
Definitely AD.
AD. We're going AD.
Yep.
1500s?
Close. 1405 was the first recorded Irish whiskey distillation process.
I would like to see 1405 Ireland.
Everybody just schlupping around.
Schlupping around. That's right.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just waking up and it's 1405 and that's the time you were alive?
And the funny thing is in 1405 in Ireland, the individuals that were supposedly distilling this at the time were none other than the monks.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, it's that, like, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I mean, monks, they were definitely schlepping around.
Yeah, yeah. And then to fast forward a little bit, the bourbon uniquely created in America actually has roots back to the 1700s when European settlers, many of them Irish and Scottish, brought that distillation knowledge to Kentucky and Tennessee.
It's like Braveheart.
Oh, I wish. God,
storming,
great flick.
Storming Kentucky.
Great flick.
I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. He kills men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse.
Paint my face. Let's go. Mel Gibson, RIP, your career. So in 1838, at just 19 years old, H-Mack set sail for America, eventually settling in Kentucky. So this was slowly becoming kind of the heart of the bourbon production. Again, 1700s is when a lot of European settlers came over from Ireland and Scotland, brought that distillation knowledge over. So we're fast-forwarding to 1838, when Henry McKenna was 19 years old. So he actually originally started his professional career not as an IT recruiter or journalist, but as a miller. So he was actually operating a grits mill, literally that big wheel that gets turned by water that churns the grain. So this was a very common trade at the time, as mills were very crucial to the process of grains, kind of fueling both the food production, but also the whiskey making production. So by the 1850s, specifically 1855, when the brand became what it is today, Henry McKenna began distilling whiskey using his Irish heritage and techniques to kind of create this smoother, high-quality bourbon. So unlike many distillers of his time, he aged the whiskey longer, hence the 10-year bottle and bond, which was very rare for this era when a lot of the bourbons were being sold as very young and kind of rough around the edges. I assume they were really hot on the front end with maybe a little bit of spice, but he really took kind of quality to a different level, right? Which kind of brings me to my next point. His distillery was one of the first in the region to kind of implement a very strict quality control process, which would ultimately later align to the bottled and bond standards, which were established in 1897.
It makes sense because it does look like a bottle that would be on the upper shelf, right? Like this looks like a bottle that you would, that wants, at least wants to differentiate itself from the Woodfords and the Bullets of the world, right? It wants to be a shelf higher than that.
Yeah.
It kind of presents itself that way with the, again, this, the green label, expensive, the Benjamin sticker on top.
Gold,
right?
Foil.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it's crazy that 1850, it was already kind of setting the precedent for that.
Absolutely. It was setting the precedent for being bottled and bond even before the standards were there, right? Yeah. It's almost like...
trendsetter.
Exactly. So the Henry McKenna Distillery remained family-owned and operated until 1941 in Fairfield, Kentucky, when finally the business was sold. So after changing hands several times, Heaven Hill, which we discussed in our first episode...
Pilot.
The Pilot. Heaven Hill Distillery acquired the brand and the production rights and eventually refined it into the 10-year-old bottle and bond single barrel, as we know what it is today. So most bottle and bond bourbons are made by blending multiple barrels from the same season for that consistency, whereas Henry McKenna 10-year follows that bottle and bond rule and process and also uses single barrel standards, which means every bottle is from one barrel, making every release slightly unique. So, for instance, I just had this happen to me not too long ago where I was at a bourbon tasting with my buddy, and I believe it was either Matt or Josh, broke out a Smoke Wagon private barrel bourbon, and I tried it, and I'm like, wow, this is dynamite. So I went to Total Wine, picked one up for like $115, and to me, it's just, it's sweet on the front, long finish, but it's just all spice. There's not like these cherry notes, and it's very dependent on the specific barrel, and it always says in the, you know, in the fine print of what specific barrel it comes from or what cask. So that's another example of, it's an extreme example because it's higher proof and, you know, typically you're going to get a longer finish and it's a lot different. You're paying for the proof and for the taste. But in this case, Henry McKenna seems to have that similar profile where some barrels can taste fantastic and others are kind of like muted, right? Whereas some just really expand on the flavor of multiple notes on the palate versus, you know, just kind of maybe a little sweet on the front, spice on the back, right?
I think it's wild that like you might pick up a Henry McKenna bottled and bond single barrel and really fucking love it and then buy more and maybe you don't love it so much anymore after you buy the next bottle. I think that part of it, just at a simple level, more simple level, right, is like it's kind of crazy. It almost makes you want to savor it more if you find one that you really like. And it doesn't have to just be Henry McKenna, right? It could be any single barrel. But you find one you really like, it's almost like, ooh, this one's going to be a little bit more precious for me, right? It's going to fall onto that part of my shelf a little bit more, or maybe hide it in my cabinet a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to bust this one out on better occasions because once this runs out, I might not be able to find it again.
That's exactly right. And that also happens with a lot of store picks as well. Like, I have a really good barrel store pick from True Value Liquors that I'll never find again. And it supposedly has a similar mash bill from the Willett recipe, Purple Top, but it's fantastic. And I bought four bottles, you know, right off the bat. I tried a sample. I'm like, this is one of the best bourbons I've ever had. Boom, buying four bottles. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, that does happen. And that's something you got to keep in mind. If you truly like a specific store pick, or there's, you know, you open it up at home and there's still some on the shelf, go back, pick up a couple more bottles, because you never know if you're ever going to get that same exact profile that you really enjoy. So should we dive into the tasting notes?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
So today I have a bottle that, actually, it's kind of fun. I can tell you the two different bottles we have. So one I've had for quite some time. I bought it about 3 or 4 years ago, but I opened it this last year. So it's barrel number 11934. And then I just recently bought one here earlier this year as well. And that bottle is number 13465. So this one I just opened, the 13465. So it's going to be a little bit more hotter, but we'll see if we can actually taste the difference in the notes between the two bottles itself.
Love it, man. Fair. Sounds great. Yeah. So we're going to start with the previously opened.
Correct. We're going to start with the 11934. Again, the bottle that's about three to four years old, but recently opened it about a year ago, and it's kind of on its last leg, about a fourth full. All right,
buddy. On the nose, what are you picking up?
Oof.
Yeah?
I mean, I love
that. Is that a happy oof?
Doesn't that smell good?
I would say on the nose, this feels like a bourbon that I'm going to love, right? Because it's heavy fruit.
Yeah.
What are you getting? Is that cherry? What is that?
I get a ton of vanilla, like right up front. Mm-hmm. It's very in your face.
Cherry vanilla.
Yes, very much so. And then you get that like toasted oak, maybe a little bit of spice, and then almost like a lighter red fruit.
Okay.
Moment of truth.
This is the moment of truth, and I have high hopes. So do not let me down, Henry. You're my boy.
Come on, H-Mac. Here we go.
You're my boy, Blue! You're my boy.
Dude, I love this bourbon. This is really good. It's not as thin on the front as we've had on previous episodes. Mm-hmm. Recently, you get that like nice sweetness on the front.
A lot of times we'll get almost like honey, but this is truly like that toasted oak. It goes from like vanilla to toasted oak. On the sides, I get like that spice that lingers through like a mid to kind of long finish. But there's also a hint of like those dark fruits. It's not as prevalent as it was on the nose, but I still think it's there. And it's fairly complex.
It is complex.
For a bottle and bond that compared to all the other ones that we've tried, it's kind of a thin 100 proof on the palate, but it's a longer finish. It's like that mid to long finish. You can still taste the spices on the kind of the back of your tongue, down the throat for I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds.
But you laughed in my face when I said I'd be having sex tonight.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you shouldn't just always be prepared. You know, you didn't even bring a condom?
No. No, Evan, that wasn't part of the plan. I can't believe you did this without consulting with me about it.
Why are you talking about a plan? We've never discussed, like, any plan, but you keep saying we have a plan.
I had, like, a general outline, you know? I was gonna go down on her for, like, several hours, okay? She would love that. She'd be smitten by that. She'd go out with that. Or I'd dry hump the shit out of her leg.
Okay, well, I don't see the harm in bringing one little condom.
And one little bottle of spermicidal lube?
Yeah, one little bottle of spermicidal lube.
So on the finish, I have mentioned this, but I do think it is fairly long. Like, it's a mid to long finish for sure, especially with the spice that just kind of lingers with that oak as well. So I think it's just a fantastic pour overall.
All right, so the new bottle on the nose, Zika, similar, right? We expect it to be hotter.
Correct.
And it will be because we just popped this open. It's very similar to me, almost like a little bit more of more prevalent caramel notes.
More caramel, less vanilla.
Okay.
For me. Like on this one, I feel like I'm not going to catch much like dark fruits at all. I feel like it's going to go a little bit of vanilla to a lot of caramel to that toasted oak to that spice, if I'm just guessing.
I'll tell you what. It's not as hot as I thought it would be on the nose.
Right, yeah.
I'm interested to hit the palate because on the nose, I was expecting this new bottle you just popped to be much hotter. But on the nose, it's not playing that way. I'm wondering if the palate's going to give us that experience, that heat that maybe we were missing earlier.
I think you might be right.
Thank you.
But I think there's also only one way to find out.
We got
to
drink it.
That's a spicy meatball.
I think if... You know, the wife was like, you want a bourbon? I was like, yeah. And she poured this into a, you know, a regular whiskey glass with a big ice cube in it. I think it would be absolute utter perfection because I'm getting very similar notes to the first one. It's just a little hotter to me.
I think the same. Still kind of like mid, full body, mid to long finish. Still get those notes of vanilla, caramel, a little bit of spice. Don't get as much dark fruit. But ultimately, the baking spices kind of are more upfront and forward, which I think you're going to find with a bourbon that's a little bit more ethanol heavy on the front end. We just opened this bottle, right? So I think it's going to be a little bit more diluted on that first bottle versus this bottle that we just opened up. So very good bourbon overall. Still love it. Definitely in my top five. But that first bottle for sure kind of shine through versus the second bottle here. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. The difference between the Henry McKenna that's been open for a year and the one we just opened is pretty fucking different, right? Like they're not even close to the same. On the nose, maybe similar. On the palate, not even close. And I think the first one was definitely my preference. The second one's still delicious. It's just a little bit more of a spicy meatball.
So aging here, we're looking at 10 years for every one of these bottles. Again, your typical bottle and bond is going to be roughly about 4 years, just for the age statement to technically be a bottle and bond statement. But Henry McKenna just does it different, right? So they're all about that quality control that we spoke about earlier, and they specifically age every single one of these bottles at least 10 years. So remember, every age statement that's on a bottle, that's the lowest number of the barrel that has gone into that bottle. So just because it says 10-year, 6-year, 8-year, whatever it is, that means that's the lowest barrel, assuming that they blended it. In this case, they didn't, but the lowest number barrel that it's been aged is always on the label. And mash bill, we're looking at 75% corn, 13% rye, and 12% malted barley. And I know one of the questions you had last week was just regarding...
I was just going to bring that up because I can't remember. I want to say it was like over 80% corn and single digits rye and barley. I can't remember the exact figures, but I remember it being way heavier on the corn side for Uncle Nearest, right, last week. And it's interesting to see this mash bill because this bourbon is sweeter on the front end. than Uncle Nearest was, at least the batch we tried.
Exactly. And so Uncle Nearest, I can't remember how long it was specifically aged for. I believe we spoke about it being aged for 8 to 14 years, whereas this specific bottle and bond was aged 10 years, right? So 8 to 14 versus 10 years. And Uncle Nearest was 84% corn, 8% rye, 8% malted barley versus this mash bill of the 10-year, 75% corn, 13% rye, 12% malted barley. So we're looking at two different bourbons, one with a mash bill at 84% corn, which think corn sweet, versus the mash bill of Henry McKenna, 75% corn. You'd think that the Uncle Nearest would be even sweeter than this,
crazy
right?
Sweet, yeah.
Exactly. But we didn't get that. We got a lot of spice, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously right there it goes to show there's a lot more that goes into this distillation process, the aging process, where it's aged, how it's aged, mm-hmm. climate conditions, where it's at in the rickhouse. That goes into the overall profile and the taste of a fantastic bottle of bourbon, like the aged 10-year Henry McKenna.
Yeah, the mash bill, just part of the story.
Exactly.
Not the whole story. All right, where does Henry McKenna 10-year land on the Bourbon Playbook Essential 5 scale? And again, that is the Daily Dram, Impressed by Guests, Budget Blend, Saturday Night Sipper, and the PJ Fleck Precious Pour, right? Yeah. All right. So going back to the top, Daily Dram, did you cover the MSRP, Mike?
I did. So MSRP is roughly about $55 to $60 for this pour.
Okay. So typically, Daily Dram, we want that to be a little bit more affordable, right?
In my opinion, again, everything in this scale is subjective.
It is. And you said you could get Henry McKenna. You could pretty much go and find this bottle.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
For $55 to $60.
Let me pass over Daily Dram. That's a little expensive, I think, right? But I think this bourbon's really fucking good. So could I sip on this daily? Yeah, maybe, but maybe it's too pricey. I'm going to skip that. Impress My Guests. It's a solid bourbon. I think the presentation is impressive in the Benjamin sticker that we talked about earlier in the pod and the kind of the money coloring. I think is all kind of impressive, and I think the bourbon is impressive as well. So I think certainly Impress My Guests is in play. I'm not going to eliminate that right now. Budget Blend, I'll eliminate, right? I think this is not a bourbon I would put I wouldn't waste this bourbon in a Manhattan. I just enjoyed it too much. I wouldn't put this in a old fashioned, you know, I would rather sip this neat or at worst on the rocks. This is not one that I'm going to want to, I don't know. It doesn't rise to that Budget Blend to me. And plus the MSRP is a little too high. I will eliminate Budget Blend. I'll also eliminate Precious Pour. I don't think it's quite to that level, although this is one of my favorites so far. We haven't had a lot of Precious Pours on the pod yet, right? Like, we're not sipping a lot of like Pappy. No. You know, like we haven't gotten there. If anyone wants to like donate some samples, you know, like we'd be happy to try them, but
100%.
We haven't had a ton of Precious Pours yet. It's not there. Although I really like this. I think for me, this is probably going to fall into the Saturday Night Sipper one for me. Not every Saturday night. Like, I think if I found a bottle of Henry McKenna that I really liked and it was really hitting for me, every now and then on a Saturday, I would pull it out. But it would be like a precious Saturday night pour, if that makes sense, right? Like a precious Saturday pour.
So let me do this. I'm going to give you two scenarios.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I bought my first bottle of Henry McKenna 10-year, it was roughly about 2020, 2021. Okay. Henry McKenna 10-year bottle and bond used to be found around $30 to $35 a bottle, right? Mm-hmm. Screw on top. Just like the Weller Special Reserve. In 2018 and 19, it won Best Bourbon in the San Francisco International Wine and Spirits Competition, along with Best Whiskey Overall in the same competition. by 2020 and 2021, it was automatically doubled in price to $50 to $60 a bottle, which it still is today. Okay. So this happened to be one of the first bottles that landed in my Lazy Susan in 2019 in my apartment for $30.
Is this when you're first starting to get into it?
Exactly.
Okay.
So for me, this was like the bottle that was like, wow, this is the best bottle I have, right? So I dabbled in like the Bullets and the Four Roses, and I got a single barrel, and I thought that was great. And then I continued like Maker's Mark 46. I'm like, oh, that was cool. Awesome. Want to try that. Got into Rowan's Creek. I got into Willett, you know. And then I came across this bottle, and I'm like, this is the best bottle I've had, right? This is when I was first getting into bourbon.
I can see that.
Right. And again, I'm like, man, $30 a bottle? I'm like, this is great. Mm. And literally the next year, the following year, it goes up after winning these competitions, very similar to Booker's, the Jim Beam line, to $50 to $60 a bottle after a couple awards.
So these awards priced it out of Daily Dram.
That's what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. So
I know, just land the plane. Zika.
So, little backstory. Okay. Before I land the plane,
here we go.
We're gonna do a couple.
Put it back
laps.
In the air. Yeah, put it back in the air. We're gonna circle the runway a few more times.
Rumor has it that Heaven Hill wasn't planning to even enter this. And again, Heaven Hill purchased Henry McKenna several years before this, and Heaven Hill wasn't even planning to enter this in the competition at the time in 2018, 2019. But at the last minute, they went to a local liquor store and pulled it right off the shelf and entered it. So this is highly unlikely, right? But this is ultimately a rumor. And since then, they won these awards for what was a daily sipper for many bourbon fans and ultimately became this special allocated bottle at that $50 to $60 price point. So in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, this is a daily dram, right? Looking back, I might have a different story, but now, today, currently in the present, I'm looking at something to impress my guests. Okay. I'm looking at a bottle that's not only a bottle and bond, right? 4 year typically.
But it's money.
But it's a single barrel, 10 year bottle and bond, which is super rare. Like, name one other single barrel, age 10 years, bottle and bond bourbon. My point being is this bottle is, not only does it look really cool, like we talked about the dollar bill, the Benjamin, the Hunter proof, like it looks cool. It's got the gold foil. It's sharp, but also tastes and has those characteristics of a 10 year, right? Like it's not a 4 to 6 year bourbon, right? Like it has a longer finish. It has those characteristics that you're looking for. And for the price point at roughly $55 to $60, I truly feel like this is something that I could break out with my guests and impress them just based off of not only the taste, but how it looks and the story behind it.
And with that, thanks for tuning in to the Bourbon Playbook, where we put our livers on the line so you don't have to. And again, shout out to my boy, Henry, who I used to do a Patriots podcast with back in the day. Same name, Henry McKenna. This one's for you, my friend.
And remember, just like Henry McKenna, some things get better with age, like bourbon wisdom and our ability to justify buying more bottles. Cheers, folks.